on the cross. And so, you know, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the story of redemption, the story of the Bible, the narrative of the Bible. We've talked about it, the fact that it is a big novel. You know, it's not some book with a bunch of other books all compiled into one. No, it's one big story. And for us to understand the story and be able to give the book report, as it were, and convince others that, hey, this is a great story that you guys need to become intimately involved with and take part in, we ourselves have to know the story. We have to know it ourselves. You know, it's not enough to pick it up in the middle and just start reading there. You know, anybody who picks up a novel and flips to the middle of the book and starts reading is going to be terribly lost. Nobody goes to the library, grabs a book, and starts reading that way. You know, we all start at the beginning and work our way through. And we see the character development going on. We see the buildup of the plot and the storyline and the climax and the ending. And that's certainly exactly the way the Bible reads for us. You know, there's a tragedy. Everything's great in the beginning. A tragedy happens. A hero comes along, saves the day, and we all live happily ever after. That's the overall process that the story of redemption follows, and so that's what we're here to talk about in this series. So now we're in Exodus chapter 13 through, I'm sorry, no we're not, there we are, Exodus 19 through Numbers 10. I'm kind of compartmentalizing the Bible, as it were, and kind of breaking it up into sections. For me it helps to make things more manageable. You know, if we can kind of think, okay, well, in this section, this is what happened, and in this section, this is what happened. And so now we're in Exodus 19 through Numbers 10, which covers the 1 year that the Israelites and Moses and all spent at Mount Sinai. A lot of stuff took place there. There was the receiving of the law and all kinds of other things, and we're going to look at that. Last week we talked about Israel's complaining and rebellion against God through their unbelief and their faithlessness during the 2 month journey to Sinai. And, you know, we spent a good bit of time there talking about faith and what faith really is. And we spent a good bit of time, you know, discussing the idea of the difference between belief and faith. You know, we all believe to an extent. I mean, we all can read these amazing stories of the Bible and believe, yeah, that happened. You know, God did that. Those people were real. It really happened. You know, all the insane stories that are discussed and highlighted in Hebrews 11, we all believe those things happen. But where faith comes in, though, is do we have the faith that God will also do those things for us? You know, all the amazing things that when people stepped out on faith and said, God will do it. And God did it. Is that how we are? You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to me, an unbelievable story. You know, and we've all heard that story taught over and over, especially we who have been in church since, you know, we were born. How many coloring sheets did we do and everything else of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? You know, we were all intimately familiar with that story. But when we put it on a real level that makes sense to us, it opens up a whole new ball game. For example, to my knowledge and to my recollection, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had never seen a miracle take place. They had never heard the voice of God. You know, they had never seen God just come down and do these very direct and very obvious things. You know, we talked about the Israelites, how the plagues, you know, those plagues, it could not be denied that was the hand of God at work. Even Pharaoh's own magicians said, this is the finger of God. After about the fourth plague, when the gnats hit and they weren't able to reproduce it, they said, this is the hand of God at work. And so it was very obvious. You know, the people of Israel saw this, and they could not deny that it was God. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to the best of our knowledge, they never had such luxuries. So in a very real way, they were just like you and I. They were guys who heard the stories. They believed the stories. But the difference was, when it came down to it, when the king said, look, you're going to worship this statue or else, they said, well, just throw us on in the fire then. Now, guys, I don't know about you, but that's just courage that I don't think I've got. If I'm just going to be flat out honest with you, I don't think I have that kind of courage. You know, this was a faith that completely and utterly defied all logic. Their mindset was, you go ahead and throw us in there, God can spare us from that fire. He can. Now, they lacked a little bit, right? And perhaps this is kind of a, you know, I was talking with Mike about this Sunday. You know, perhaps it's their human nature coming into play. You know, the fact of the matter is, we don't know what God is going to do. We know He can do things. We know He will do things. The Israelites at the Red Sea, they had no idea that He was going to part that massive body of water and they were going to walk across on dry land. That just logically doesn't make sense. But see, Moses had faith that God was going to do something. Okay? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego seemed to have that same kind of faith. That faith that said, go ahead and toss us in. God can spare us. And even if He doesn't, we're still not going to bow. But He can. You know, they had that faith that He could and would. And so I think we all have, to an extent, have that belief that God can do things and God has done things in the past. But when the rubber really meets the road of where, well, will God do those things for me? That's where faith has to take over. And that's where it takes us saying, I don't know, but I'm going to go out on it anyways. Okay? That's what faith is. And so we talked a good bit about that last week. So some four main events that took place here at the 1 year at Sinai. The law was given, the pattern for the tabernacle was disclosed, and the tabernacle was constructed. The pattern for the priesthood and the sacrificial system was revealed, and the nation of Israel was numbered and organized. All this section here is a big deal. All right, and we're going to spend some time talking about this because, you know, kind of like the whole idea, you know, we spent a good bit of time in Genesis, you know, a good bit of time talking about the beginning and the fall, and we spent a good bit of time talking about the flood. Well, all that stuff was laying a foundation. Well, this is part of that foundation. All right, you know, the whole law, the idea of the sacrificial system and all, this was the very beginnings of the idea of redemption. This is where it all really started, and, you know, and we've talked about a lot of traction was picked up, where now we're really gaining some ground, all right, because now, you know, we're starting to see the beginnings of redemption, and as we eventually get to the cross, we see that this, the law and everything about it, is a big deal. And we see Jesus fussing with these guys about it, and the whole thing just got blown to bits, and it was causing all kinds of problems in the first century. And we see, even after the cross, we see the idea of the law still causing problems. Paul, many of his letters was battling this idea of the law. And so so we're going to spend some time here discussing this, and because it's important for us to... Having an understanding of the law is important to help us understand how good we have it now. You know, Lex is well known for saying in here that Jesus has just made it so much easier. He's made it so easy. And that there's a tremendous amount of truth to that. And an understanding of the law and the problems that came along with the law helps us better understand how good we have it under Jesus. Okay? And so we're going to talk about that some, so let's just jump right on into it. All right, Exodus chapter 19, 10 through 13. Got some reading to do. Can I get some volunteers? All right, so we see God preparing the people to meet Him. Okay, big deal. And God makes it quite clear here just how big of a deal this is, right? And so, you know, they're supposed to put boundaries around this mountain and you're not to come near. And I think He gives a rather stern warning as to how tragic of a situation it would be for you if you do. All right, let's read on. What happened? Okay, so that was 10 through 13. All right, 13 through 17. All right. Verses 18 through 20. All right, so a pretty frightening scene, isn't it? You know, this is obviously a very big deal. And this is such a scene that is bringing the people of Israel to trembling and fear. All right, Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. So we're getting in now to the Ten Commandments. I got another reader, please. And there's a lot of truth to that, isn't there? You know, we who are now, after all this stuff is taking place and we had the recorded events, we've seen this to be a very real truth. You know, how many times have we seen God's people go astray, and for generations to come, there's problems? Okay, and so when we see that they're visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children on the third and fourth generations, you know, this is a big deal, you know, going up against God. But at the same time, how many times do we see God indeed showing his loving kindness when people return and come back to him? You know, how many times do we see that healing taking place? And so we ourselves, you know, just being intimately knowledgeable of the word as we are, we know this to be a truth, and we have seen this play out over the passages of Scripture. All right, verses 7 through 11, the Ten Commandments carrying on. All right, Exodus 20, 12 through 17. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. All right, so again, a lot of reading, and thank you for those who are reading. Brent, hope you're all right, man. Will another chocolate help it out?
No?
Okay, all right. They just heal my throat well. You know. All right, so, but these are the Ten Commandments. No other gods before me. You shall not make idols. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Remember and keep the Sabbath. Honor your father and mother. You shall not murder, shall not commit adultery, shall not steal, shall not bear false witness, and shall not covet your neighbor's stuff. All right, that's the summary of them all. Who or what is the common theme of the first four commandments here? That's right. It's all about God, isn't it? And how we are to honor and treat God. What about the latter six? What's the common theme? Yeah, how to treat other people, right? And so You know, the first commandments relate to the Israelites' relationship with God. Last six commandments relate to the Israelites' relationship with one another. What passage does this remind you of? I think Doug just mentioned it. Matthew 22:34-40. But when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. And so that's really the Ten Commandments. They're all summed up in two simple things, isn't it? Yeah. Are we still bound to these? Well, that's a big debate going on around the Christendom on this subject, isn't it? You know, I think in the churches of Christ, I think we all have come to a solid conclusion on it. But when we look at a lot of people around us, there's still a hefty dependence on, oh, the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments. Are these things bad? They're not, are they? You know, but are we still bound by them? Let's look and see. Colossians chapter 2, verse 8, and also verses 13 through 14. Would somebody like to read?
See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. When you were dead in your transgressions and the uncircumcision of your flesh,
Yeah, and I like that last bit there, you know, that certificate of debt consisting of decrees against us. You know, again, that's some reference to the law there. The law of Moses, that decrees against us, which was hostile to us, and he has taken out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. And again, you know, we've talked some about, back in when we were talking about Abraham, we talked some about the covenant, you know, and God had made that covenant with Abraham. And well, now we're under a new covenant. And this covenant is far better than the one before. Jesus, having taken it out of the way and put in place a new one, he nailed that old one to the cross, and we now have a new and better way. What about Galatians 5, verses 1 through 4? Somebody like to read.
Huh?
All right, and so this is a really powerful passage, and it says a lot of things, but we have to keep in mind what Paul was dealing with here. You know, Paul dealt a lot in his letters of this idea where you had Jewish Christians meeting up with Gentile Christians, and the Jewish Christians were having a hard time letting go of the old way of living under the law and moving to this new way of being free in Christ. You know, I think many of us would have such a very difficult time transitioning out of something that we had lived by and we had guided our lives by, you know, these deep embedded principles within us, and all of a sudden, they're not, you know, we're not beholden to them anymore. That would be a tough transition for us to make. And so we understand, you know, why the Jewish Christians at this time who had given their lives to Christ had a hard time breaking away from the law. You know, we saw Paul addressing a lot of that in Romans. You know, there was a lot of fuss about, you know, the meat being sacrificed to idols. Well, Gentile brethren had no problem with that. They've been eating that meat out of the market for centuries. It was no big deal to them, you know. That was not the case with the Jewish people, though. And so Paul said, look, you know, let's don't be hurting each other over what we're going to eat, you know. And, you know, if you got a Jewish brother coming over to your house, don't be serving them meat that was sacrificed to an idol. Just don't do that, you know. Neither of you are right or wrong, but look, come on, let's work together, you know. Bart? Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. Are we still bound by the law? I think that there's like, in my mind, there are two different aspects that we have to consider here. The law that Paul's speaking about here was the beatdown that the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the religious leaders were using to try to control the people. It was the laws about how to keep the law that Jesus said. Mm-hmm. That's still good today. And if you want to call that the law, the Ten Commandments that God gave us, this is very much applicable because Christ said, these you need to do.
Yeah.
But the law that we speak of here and the law that we're no longer bound to, I try to keep perspective that a lot of that was geared towards that beat down methodology that the religious leaders were using to pull a nation.
Okay.
So I think there's two parts to that, at least in my mind.
Sure.
How I think about it. The law is still applicable in the right, you know, thinking about it as Christ presented.
Yeah, and we'll get more into that here in just a minute, talking about how Christ discussed the law. Let's continue working our way through it. Mike? Correct.
That's based on action.
Action, yes. Okay. Yeah. And that generated a lot of problems by the time Jesus arrived. And I mean, Jesus went to battle with these guys all the time over it because, you know, they were so, the law, do it. You know, and a lot of self-righteousness had risen in the form of the Pharisees because, well, I'm keeping the law. And, you know, so we see Jesus telling all these stories about, you know, one guy who's over there saying, I'm glad I'm not like that guy. I give of this, and I do this, and I do that. I'm the man, God. And the other guy's over there beating his chest, not willing even to lift his eyes towards heaven, and is saying, forgive me, the sinner. And Jesus says, which one do you think went home justified? All right, and so Jesus was having a lot of problems with this because of the self-righteousness and the holier-than-thou attitude that had arisen from the law. And by the time Paul comes around, what we see doing is this is there was an attempt of many, especially from the Jewish side, obviously, who are trying to intermingle the gospel and the law. And so, you know, Jesus is the way. Jesus is the life. Jesus is salvation. You know, be baptized in him. You know, they were teaching that, but you also need to be circumcised. And this ties all the way back to Abraham. And, you know, if you're going to be a covenant-related person with God, you got to be circumcised. And so, it's all about the physical and the doing. Where Paul was saying, look, don't be subject again to a yoke of slavery. You've been set free from all this stuff. You know? And I'm saying to you that if you receive circumcision, Christ will be of no benefit to you. Now, he's not just simply saying this as a matter of medical procedure or anything of that nature. What Paul is saying here is if you are doing this because this is how you believe you're going to be saved, you're messing up. If you're seeking to have yourself justified by your ability to keep the law, then you have to keep the whole thing. Because if you fall in one part, you're a goner. End of discussion. But he's saying it's just not like that under Christ, though. And so, you know, why subject again yourself to this yoke of slavery? And so that's kind of where Paul is doing here. He's attacking this need of some who are trying to intermingle both the law and the gospel into one thing, and we're saying, well, both have to be done. Paul is saying, no, absolutely not. All right, moving on. Romans chapter 7, verses 4 through 6. Therefore, my brethren, you also were made to die to the law through the body of Christ, so that you might be joined to another, to him who was raised from the dead, in order that we might bear fruit for God. For while we were in the flesh, the sinful passions which were aroused by the law were at work in the members of our body to bear fruit for death. But now we have been released from the law, having died to that by which we were bound, so that we serve newness of the Spirit, or serve in newness of the Spirit, and not in oldness of the letter. So again, here Paul is saying, look, you're not led by the letter of the law anymore. You're now led by the Spirit who dwells within you. I like the way Mike often puts it. You know, when you're baptized, the Spirit will come and dwell within you, and he'll change you from the inside out. I like that analogy. You know, that's truly the way it is for us. And, you know, if we try to live by the letter of the law today, we're going to mess up. And it's going to cause us a lot of problems, and it's going to lead to a lot of self-righteousness, and we just don't want to go back there. Bob?
Well, he's always trying to make it better for
us. Yes.
I mean, the law was good. Now, grace is better.
Sure.
And they have to see it that way. You know?
Sure. Well, I think we can make a good argument, though, that there was plenty of grace in the Old Testament, right?
Well, you know, it was good at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you got to
right. That's right. All right. But again, as we said, these are good things, though, right? No other gods, no idols, not taking the Lord's name in vain, honoring your father and mother, don't murder, don't commit adultery. I mean, do we not all live by those things? Or is this not, you know, what we would consider today a biblical way of living? These are all good things. But what does Jesus say? And this is kind of, I think, maybe, Bart, where you were getting to, and I said that we would get into. You know, Matthew chapter 5, 21 through 22. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court, and whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, and whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. What is Jesus saying here?
It's not a matter of action, but it's a matter of the heart.
Yeah.
If you hate somebody, you are trying to hurt them emotionally by the words you use, if you're putting them down, mm-hmm. You may not be physically murdering, but that's wrong.
Yeah. Is that what the Ten Commandments said? Don't call your brother a fool. Don't be angry. That's not what it said, is it? I mean, it said don't murder. And I firmly believe that when Moses heard that word from God and started inscribing it on these tablets of stone, I believe that's exactly what God meant. Don't be going around killing each other. Don't murder. I don't think the intent that God was relaying to Moses there, that was then to be relayed to the people of Israel, that they were not to be angry with one another and calling each other names. I don't think that was the intent of it. So what is Jesus getting at? Sue hit the nail on the head. He's getting at the heart. And so was Jesus saying that, well, what God meant was that what Jesus was saying? No. Of course God meant don't be going around killing each other. Don't murder. That's what God meant. But again, this is what the law brought, an idea of self-righteousness. And so the people had taken on a mindset, well, I can be angry and I can call my brother this and that. I ain't killing them, so I'm good. Jesus says, no, you're not. And this is the problem with a law-based religion. You know, it turns into a series of check boxes. Check, 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 check. I'm good. God ain't going to do nothing to me. I'm the man. You know, and so we start to take on this self-righteous attitude of, hey, I'm checking all the boxes. I do this and I do that. I do that. I ain't like that guy over there. And that's what Jesus was getting at. Jesus wasn't invalidating the law of don't murder here. But he was taken to a whole nother level, a level that the Jewish mind of his day was not at. That's not the way they thought. That was not the heart they had. Their heart was, I ain't killed nobody. Check. Bart. Bart's about to get deep on me, man. Am I wading in the muddy waters?
God changed his mind somewhere downstream and thought that something was, wasn't good this way. I think God understood his creation when he gave the Ten Commandments and understood that the only way to keep those commandments was to really, to the point where Jesus got to. In Matthew, there's that if you really understood the purpose of the Ten Commandments, it wasn't to be legalistic and say, don't murder. It was if you really got the concept of it back then, you would have understood, don't do the things that lead to these. Hmm.
Sure.
And it got to the point to where, you know, Christ finally put it out in front of us, and it was the same thought in my mind, it was the same understanding that God would have had back then to finally teach us that next step of understand it's not, as you're saying, it's not about the letter of the law, even with the Ten Commandments, but it's always been about those concepts of love.
Yes.
And it's just, when does God reveal to us? In his time.
Yeah.
And I think at the very beginning, he had the same thought and the same goal in mind, but it took him to the point where it was finally time to reveal what he was really getting.
Yes, fully agree. Fully agree with you. Mike, do you have a comment?
Matthew 23:23 says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill when coming and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy, faithfulness. These are the things you should have done without neglecting the others.
Yes.
They should have kept all those. He wasn't saying they shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
They should do that, but they completely neglected.
Yes.
Think of the expression, holes big enough to drive a truck through. Their interpretation of what the law was and what God expected of them just let them go do much worse things.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of our human nature to an extent, isn't it? You know, just my personal view on it, we tend to operate a lot better within a framework of law and rules, right? You know, we start to get squirrely and uncomfortable when there's no expectation. You know, imagine going to a job and the boss, and you go in and say, all right, well, first day on the job, what do you want me to do? I'll just have at it. Okay, you know, we work within a system of rules and a framework of laws, don't we? I'll get to you in just a second, Bob. You know, our whole society today is a massive system of laws and rules and things. You know, it helps keep things organized. We like that concept. Our minds operate a lot better when we have this, okay, I have it all right here. I have it organized. I know what's expected of me. Check, 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 check. Okay, I'm good. You know, how many of you have walked away from a work day, you know, had to finally walk away because it was getting late at night, but the job just wasn't done. It's a real frustrating thing sometimes, isn't it? You know, having to just walk away, leave it undone, and come back to it tomorrow. You know, our minds work better when we can go in there and it's done, it's done, it's done. Phew, all right, let's go home. You know, that feeling of accomplishment and I did it. I'm good. You know, that's something that's core to just mankind in general, in my opinion. You know, I'm no psychologist or anything, but that's just the way my brain works, you know. And so we see a lot of that coming out. And I think this is, again, where law leads. You know, and Jesus battled this over and over and over and over throughout his ministry. I was like, look, you guys are completely missing the point here. Bob?
Well, another thing he's trying to say is that when you come to the altar for an offering, and you got a problem with your brother, He says, go and make your heart right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What about number 7? You shall not commit adultery. Matthew 5, 27 through 30. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. That is mind-blowing. You know, could you imagine what the Jewish people of this day were thinking as Jesus is uttering these words in their very presence? I imagine many of them just sitting there with their mouth agape. What? Hang on, Jesus. No. I've never cheated on my wife. I've been faithful to her forever. Yeah, but what you been thinking about when the other woman walks by the street showing a little too much? You know, cut off my hand, pluck out my eye. These are tough words, Mike.
But that's a form of the Greek language.
Okay.
Where you go to the absurd.
Sure. Kind of that straw man argument.
Yeah, he's going to the absurd here. He doesn't expect you to live with
him. Correct.
He said, look out your eye. You can get in a situation where you're not staring at him.
Yeah.
The woman. Take off your hand. Don't you do anything that could lead.
Right. Yeah, and I think we all understand he wasn't being literal here. But again, the language is very pointed and very extreme. Okay, and so, you know, Jesus makes no bones about it here that, look, as like Sue said, this is a hard issue. Jesus made that unbelievably clear right here. You know, he said it's not about just checking the box saying I've been faithful to my wife. Good to go. Jesus says, no. It's not enough for you just to be faithful to your wife. If your heart isn't right, if you've got the internal stuff going on, God knows that. The spirit that's searching the heart knows that. You got to clean it out. Okay, again, Jesus in many ways took the simplicity of the law and blew it up to something much bigger. It wasn't just a series of check boxes anymore and done, I'm good. You're wrong, I'm good. They couldn't do that anymore. All of a sudden, Jesus said, no, just because you've got a whole list of check boxes here that are all checked, hey, that's great, but you still got a world of problems. And I'm the only one that could fix it. Mike?
I think he is defining it in such a way that if we really understand what he says, we have to realize what we can't do.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And even at that, we're still human, and his grace, his righteousness, is going to have to substitute for our righteousness.
Yes.
That's what he did on the cross.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely the point that Jesus is trying to drive home in all of these. It's not enough just to check all the boxes. You're still messed up. You still need me. I still got to get to the cross, and we're almost there. Matthew 15, some Pharisees and scribes asked Jesus why his disciples did not wash their hands prior to eating and according with the traditions. And Jesus pointed out their own hypocrisy and accused them of worshiping God in vain because, hey, you honor me with your lips, but your hearts are far from me. And Jesus goes on to explain, look, you know, the Jewish people living by the law, there was all these things that if I do all these things, then I'll be unclean. So I got to do all this to make sure I don't become unclean. Very physical things. I got to wash my hands before I eat, and I got to do this and that and this and that, you know. And Jesus says, look, it's not what goes into the mouth that makes a man unclean. It's what comes out of the mouth, because the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart. And that's what makes a man unclean. Again, Jesus driving this home, he's got a 9-pound hammer he's driving this stuff home with, showing them, look, it's not enough that you're checking all the boxes and that you're living a righteous life according to the law. Your hearts are messed up. You've got to get that right. And this is confirmed even further in Jeremiah 31:33, where God says, "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days. I will put my law within them. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they shall be my people." And brethren, that's talking about us. It's talking about us. Paul affirms this truth in 2 Corinthians 3:3, saying, "And you show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts." Again, Paul here connecting the law, that the Ten Commandments that Moses put on those tablets of stone, God said, "I have put it on their hearts." And this comes back to what Mike was talking, often says, changing us from the inside out. It's about the heart. It's about our person, our spirit, who we are. At the core, not just what we do on the outside. Jesus talked about that. Whitewashed tombs. Oh, man. You walk up to that tomb, and boy, that is a beautiful gravestone. There's a family member of mine, a distant relative, third, fourth, fifth cousin. I'm from Alabama. You know how it works. Man, he died back when I was a kid, and you would not believe the headstone of his grave. It's unbelievable. It's this beautiful black marble headstone. It's got this, there's been a lot of etching on it, and so they've etched this beautiful ocean scene in it and a picture of him on the thing. And I mean, it looks just like him. And you walk up to it and say, "Wow, that is beautiful." But what's inside? Dead man's bones. And that's how Jesus described these people of that time. He talked about, you got that cup. It's all nice and clean on the outside. But you look inside, man, there's some grimy coffee stuff in there. Anybody, you coffee drinkers, you know how it is. Boy, that cup looks nice on the outside. You look inside and it's all brown. That's how Jesus compared these guys. He said, it's not all about the outside and the external. It's about what's in here. And Jesus drove that point home over and over and over. So what's the purpose of the law? Romans 7:7. What shall we say? Is it the law sin? May it never be. On the contrary, I would not have come to know sin except through the law. For I would not have known about coveting if the law had not said, "You shall not covet." And so Paul says this thing is like a tutor to us. It has taught us things. It has led us to things. It has helped us to come more intimate with God and understand who God is and what He likes and what He doesn't like. And so that stuff's important for us even. It's important for us to go read the old law and study it for ourselves. Because there's a lot of truth in there where God talks about holy living. And so there's a lot to be learned there. Galatians 3:19, why the law then? It was added because of transgressions, having been ordained through angels by the agency of a mediator until the seed, we've talked about the seed, Abraham, that promised seed, Christ, would come to whom the promise had been made. What does Paul tell us the law was for in this passage? Because of transgressions. It was meant to handle transgressions. 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17, all scriptures inspired by God and profitable for teaching, reproof, correction, training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate, equipped for every good work. What scripture was Paul talking about here? Is he talking about the New Testament? All of it, yeah. But, the simple truth of the matter is they didn't have what we call the New Testament at this time. And so when Paul's writing to Timothy, he certainly had to be talking about the Old Testament, in my opinion. And there's a lot to be learned there. Paul's saying, look, there's good stuff in that OT. There's a lot of good stuff in there. It's profitable for all of this. Use it. Lean upon it. Teach it. Galatians 3:23-27. But before faith came, we were kept in custody under the law, being shut up to the faith which was later to be revealed. Therefore, the law has become our tutor to lead us to Christ, so that we may be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under a tutor. For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. It's not a matter of checking boxes no more. It's a matter of living right. Living the Christ-like life, following Him. Take up your cross and follow me, Jesus said. He told the rich young ruler, go sell everything you have and come follow me. Man couldn't do it. And you remember that story? The guy's like, well, Lord, I've done this, I've done this, I've done all this since I was a kid. And it said Jesus was moved with compassion for this guy and felt a love for him. He said, well, one thing you lack in here. And the guy went away sorrowful. Real quick, I like this idea here, okay? And so throughout the biblical dispensations, we kind of see God operating with his people in different ways. And so, you know, if we're familiar with this, we have the patriarchal age, the mosaical age, and now what we would call the Christian age. And we kind of see God moving through this, don't we? You know, prior to the law of Moses, there wasn't a rigid structure there. It was kind of loose and not a whole lot of expectation. I mean, he certainly had expectations. But I would kind of see it, him working with his people back then, kind of like how I would work with an infant child or a young toddler. I just can't expect much from him. You know, if I say, stop crying, that doesn't mean he's going to stop crying. But as my children got older and kind of get into that adolescent phase, suddenly the rules become a lot more strict, and I've got a very strict framework in place. I have a high, high, high expectations from my children. They have chores. You have to do this, 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 this. And if you don't, boy, there's going to be severe consequences. Okay? And that's kind of the phase that I'm in with my children right now. They know what mom and dad expect. And those things are to be done, or else. You know, and we kind of see that mindset of God with the Mosaical Age. There was a huge, very rigid, firm set of rules and expectations. But now in the Christian age, we see God dealing with his people in a lot of different ways. And I see that kind of as myself now. My parents have very high expectations of me. They do. But they have no rigid set of rules of, Kirk, here's how you better be living. You better do this and that. I'm a grown man. My parents don't have all these rules that I just got to do. However, I live in a way that honors them because I respect them. I have that relationship with them. It's a very mature relationship. They have gone through the infantile and the adolescent phase with me of teaching me what it means to live a Christian, be a Christian man, and to be the son of Stephen Emmy Hunt. This is what it means to me. And that's what I find myself doing with my children today. You know, how many, Alicia and I say it all the time, you're not going to act like that. My children aren't going to be that way. My children are going to, we say it to them all the time because we're trying to teach them, this is what we expect from you so that when they become adults, they know. They know what's expected. And they just naturally live that life. That's the hope anyways. And so I kind of like that idea here, you know, and I feel today in the Christian age, we've kind of moved into this more mature relationship between God and his people, where God doesn't have this rigid set of rules, and if you don't, you know, it's more of a, we know what's expected of us. We've seen the example in his son. We've seen the example in the law. We use that law as a tutor that has brought us and led us to Christ, and now we live by that. In the manner of following Christ and patterning ourselves after him and patterning ourselves after all that has led us to God. Anyhow, coming up, Moses meets with God on Mount Sinai, the law is given, and Israel makes an idol out of a golden calf. So we're going to talk about all that coming up. Thank you for your time. Sorry for keeping you over a little bit.